We soon learned, I think, two things. One was that we could at least halve our pharmaceutical zinc oxide levels with high levels of phytase and keep the same level of performance, if not improved performance. And that was something which we never really persuaded the veterinary profession in the UK was the right thing to do. But we were very, very sure that we should have moved to half zinc levels to get the same impact. And the other thing that was at the time we just didn't understand is we were getting a lot of problems with outdoor herds. We've got a lot of outdoor sow herds with anemia, piglet anemia on outdoor herds. And when we injected them with iron, we still didn't get rid of the anemia. But when we started to superdose our diets, a lot of that anemia just drifted away.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. You can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Swine It podcast. I'm your host, Trey Kellner, and I'm excited because I'm joined by a lifelong pig nutrition expert and co-founder of Primary Diets, Paul Topless. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
My pleasure. In fact, I'm honored. Thank you very much indeed. Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this conversation and discussion. So to start off, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Paul?
Thanks. Well, I'm not from a farming background, and that often surprises people. But as a child, we had a couple of farrowing paddocks really close to home. And I used to adore watching these sows with piglets, you know, from a very early age. And I think that really imprinted on me and set me with that interest in pigs. So I ended up going through university, studying animal physiology and nutrition. And I was really lucky because my tutor was a guy called Boas, who used to work with Hammond, who was considered the father of animal physiology or farm animal physiology in England. And he influenced me a great deal and got me interested in sow nutrition. And so I was really keen to get involved in industry, the feed industry, as soon as possible. And when I did that, I found myself very quickly looking after a sow herd, which was part of the coordinated sow trials. These were fantastic trials we ran in the UK, where most of the universities that had pigs would give a small number of sows across to a common coordinated trial, which was run by the Rowett Research Institute. And we were the only feed company to be involved in that. So I found myself at planning meetings and progress meetings, sitting alongside, you know, the real heroes of pig nutrition and research. So from a very early age, I was lucky to be influenced by these giants of pig nutrition. And they taught me two things, really. They taught me the importance of scientific rigor, and then taught me to challenge dogma. And those two things are things that I'd like to pass on today as I retire. Anyone involved in the feed industry, they need to always be looking for greater scientific rigor and the ability to challenge dogma. Don't always believe what you're told. Anyway, that was my sort of start in the pig industry, really.
Yeah, that's outstanding, Paul. And then talk about, you know, after your education, where did your career lead you?
Well, I began with a national feed compounder, went through the usual training, and I became much more drawn to pig nutrition. So I always opted to do as much pig nutrition as possible. The great thing about that job was you were expected to visit a pig farm two or three times a week. So I very, very quickly learned what goes on in real farms and the way you need to get the messages across to pig producers. So again, my advice to people is you can't get on a pig farm often enough and get that sort of interaction with farmers, pig producers and pigs. I think one of the things that was happening to me in my early stages was that the nutrient requirements were thought to be, when I started work in the 70s, the early 70s, as a single figure. You know, we were desperately doing these coordinated sow trials to find out whether the lactation diet needed to be 16% protein or 17% protein. Never mind about protein quality and amino acids. We knew very little about those still at that stage. And there was this fantastic discussion going on about, you know, actually dose response and cost effectiveness, cost benefit analysis. Some of those early discussions were taking place within industry. And again, we were challenging the academics and they were challenging us with those sorts of conversations. I went into what I considered to be a bit of a cul-de-sac because I seeking promotion was promoted to run the formulations department. So I spent 2 years just learning about hardware and software and being bored out of my mind. I really got to this desperate desire to get back onto farms. You know, I went cold turkey about pig farms. You know, I just couldn't live life without visiting farms. So I got back into the technical department. Soon afterwards, the business that I was working for was taken over. I changed my job at that stage, or changed the company I was working for. And I went to work for a premix company that was looking after the very first farming business in the UK, which was looking after multiple numbers of sow farms, pig farms. Up in Yorkshire, a lot of farmers were making a lot of money out of cereals and wanted to know what to do with this money. And at the time, there were tax breaks to go into pig farming. So the business I was working for, we were building brand new pig farms. We were building identical farms with identical genetics using identical feed just trying to get the perfect pig farm. And what I learned on that occasion, which I want to stress again, is the importance of stockmanship, because we ended up with a large number of farms which were absolutely identical in almost every respect with a wide range of performance. And what used to keep me awake at night is how can I have two identical farms with the same genetics on the same feed with such a difference in performance? Hopefully towards the end, we might get a little chance to talk about stockmanship. So it's an important thing because from a feed manufacturer's point of view, what I found upsetting was that I would produce a diet which had a high value on one farm. He was getting enormous performance and value. Another farm I'd put that diet, and he would get poor value for money, poor performance. And some of that is down to stockmanship, and that's something that all advisors should really be aware of. That particular company was taken over, so I ended up forming with some old colleagues my own business to manufacture piglet starter diets, just because I got fed up of being taken over and my career kept, and people started accusing me of changing job all the time, you know, and I remember being really hurt because I hadn't changed my job once. I'd just been taken over a number of times and had it forced upon me. So the rest of my working days were spent mainly with the young pig, and with the sow. What was interesting, obviously, the sow, from birth, pigs from birth to weaning, and then a few weeks post weaning was the area that I really specialized in.
An animal nutrition technology company offering innovative products and new applications for the swine industry. The combination of AB Vista enzymes, technical services, and nutrition expertise provides the industry with new opportunities to further improve production efficiencies. Fiber is receiving renewed interest due to its influence on the microbiome, and AB Vista has brought together research experts to discuss the industry's knowledge of fiber functionality and to introduce a stimbiotic targeted to improve fiber digestion. To request access, contact NAM at abvista.com.
That's NAM at abvista.com.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Paul, and introducing yourself to our audience. So from time to time, I've said that like knowledge is just history that we're aware of, right? And I think it's important to learn from others and what others have learned before maybe you go through that mistake or that challenge or that opportunity if you want to be positive, right? So Paul, looking back at your career and your experiences, what are maybe two or the three of the biggest takeaways that you'd like to share with our audience that you've experienced and overcome that you think is important for our audience to hear and for you to share?
Well, I think one of the things that we've gone through in Europe, which I don't think you've gone through to the same extent in the US, but may have to at some point, is the loss of what we refer to as the antibiotic growth promoters. And a decision was taken in 2006 to completely ban all growth promoters. And we thought, because there were so many alternative products, that that would be an easy thing to deal with. And we found it as an industry very, very difficult to deal with. The lesson we learned was that we had to really rely on very high quality research to stand still. And that's another big point that I want to make with if you lose growth promoters, you spend a lot of money and a lot of time on research to stand still, and that's really bad for the industry. Mm-hmm. Looking back, one thing I can tell you is that during the time, we developed a research relationship with the University of Leeds, and we had continuous trials going on there for newly weaned pigs for 25 years, in fact. And for some of that time, we're looking at feed additives. These are feed additives that are being advertised in the marketplace. There's a certain amount of good scientific data behind them. When we subjected them to really high quality trials at the University of Leeds, we found that we got no response in 69% of the products we looked at. We got a significant negative response in 11% of these products that are being touted with, you know, some apparently good data with them. And in 20%, we found good results in that system. Now, the other big thing that we thought that we would find one product to replace the growth promoter with. Now, sort of figures we were getting back in 2006 was we were getting a growth response post-weaning for that 3 weeks of around 15%, feed efficiency somewhere between 2.5% and 5%. But it took us a long time to find a combination of four products that would give us the same performance. And as I say, that was a lot of time and money to stand still. And as an industry, a pig industry, you don't ever want to be standing still. You want to be moving forward all the time. We used to rely on what we thought were good quality farm trials. And you just can't afford to do that. You do need the university trials. I mean, one of the things that we were able to do as the company grew and our profitability grew was to run trials at the University of Leeds, which was a what I would call a sort of commercial disease status, and at Harper Adams University, which was a high health status, and do the same trial on the same feed in those two situations. But we can, you know, we controlled, we replicated on litter of origin, weaning weight, you know, sex, room, building, etc. We really did the job properly. And had individual pig tagging, of course. And we were incredibly confident in our results because of that relationship and the data we built up over the years. I think in the States, you've got such big farms with such big volumes, you can get the replication, you know, but with the size of farms we were dealing with, everything had to be accurate so that that you could get results, on a reasonable replication. In fact, you need the university to work out what exactly that is, the replication required. So we found it a big thing to find a way of standing still. We found that really troublesome. And that, I would say that to you in the States too, that it's very, very difficult. We've just gone through the same process with zinc oxide. We've lost zinc oxide as a pharmaceutical product. Again, I suspect it would be the same in the States. What you find when you lose something like that, half the pig herds find it reasonably, if they put in the effort, reasonably easy to change and manage without it. 25% of farms find it very difficult. 25% of farms find it impossible. You know, they just, and that's, again, I bring my, back to this point of stockmanship. Those 25% of farms that find things really difficult, often it's stockmanship is contributing to those difficulties. Anyway, the work we did on replacing growth motors, I think, gave us a huge confidence in the product development trial system that we had set up. So, it's always a problem in a commercial company. Everybody wants you to spend less on R&D. So it's a fight you've got to have, and it's worth it every penny you spend on R&D, I think. So that's something I would recommend again to your feed industry, and is go for the R&D spend.
Yeah. Paul, to piggyback off of that, you know, to ask a specific question that I wasn't planning on asking, but it just kind of came up is, variation. Like you're talking about the difference in stockmanship and the difference between, you know, health statuses and things like that. It seems like variation is a concept that people might not realize or struggle to fully perceive, et cetera. Paul, maybe just talk about a little bit about variation and how important it is to control in an R&D setting, or at least characterize, and then how important once you get to the barn level it is to know what degree of variation you have, and how sometimes you can misinterpret data because you don't have that robust population or strength of power if we look at it statistically. And how important is variation?
I don't have so many figures to hand that I'd like. I used to be able to quote chapter and verse on this some time ago, but that's one of the things in retirement that's slipping away. But absolutely, because I have to say, much to my embarrassment, to be candid with you, that before we started our work at the University of Leeds, we were doing a lot of what we thought was good development work. On farm trials, and as we grew in terms of our know-how with statistics and some of the trial techniques, we really started to home in on some of these aspects of variation or trying to explain where the variation was coming from, and we realized that a lot of the confidence we had in some of the trial results that we were getting were misplaced. And I suppose the example that I would give is we never, ever replicated or balanced for litter of origin on our farm trials. That was never possible. The farmer themselves would never let us do that.
Sure.
Because they had their own agendas, of course. And I think we made some, we got some statistical differences when we reanalyzed some of our data, when we understood the importance of litter of origin. We got some positive results for a product change, which wasn't true at all. It was a litter of origin effect. And so I became less and less confident in farm trial work and the variation we get with farm trials. Which is often great, and it's not possible to understand where that variation is coming from. That you can't define that. I'm less happy about farm trials. The only thing I would say to that is that I think the techniques we now have with meta-analysis, what I do like what we do now is we still do a lot of farm trials, but we don't really. We don't really have a lot of confidence in what they say until we can gather a large number of them together and try and put them through some sort of meta-analysis. One of the things which I may talk about later on if there's time Developments we made at the University of Leeds and at Harper Adams, which gave us consistent, significant improvements time and time again. But on farms, we still got this variation of big improvements on some farms, small improvements on, and occasionally no improvement at all, even though you got such a profound result at the university. And all that is that variation, that is coming from undefined factors in the farm trial.
No, thanks for sharing, Paul. That's a great learning to pass on to our audience. So let's shift a little bit, and if we may, let's talk about some future areas. Oh, Paul, do you have another point or another?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one point, which was I think the most exciting thing that happened to me at this stage in my life. We've just gone through all of the antibiotic growth motor, and we've got such confidence now in the trial setup that we've got at the University of Leeds and Harper Adams. We came across something totally unexpected, and that was around 2008. There was a worldwide shortage in phosphates, and it was to do with China closing down their businesses because of the Olympics there and a lot of the smog that was going on and industrial problems, the pollution. And I was faced one day with a raw material buyer said, "We don't have enough phosphate. You know, they're not fulfilling our contracts. You know, they told me we can't have it." So I got desperate. To give you the short story, I got really desperate at one stage, despite having no faith whatsoever in phytases for the early pig diet, because we'd done quite a bit of research and found phytases to be compromised by pharmaceutical zinc levels, that I didn't believe phytases could offer us anything. But I got so desperate, I was persuaded to just throw five times the normal level of phytase into a diet and just see what happens. And we got a big response at Leeds. You know, so we didn't believe it. We checked the diets, you know, we checked the data, we did all of this stuff. Went back, did it again, got the same big result. And this was on top of the full level of phosphorus in the diet. So we played a part in discovering superdosing with phytase, and that was good for us commercially because we really moved ahead one or two of our competitors at that time with superdosing phosphorus, the phytase. But we soon learned, I think, two things. One was that we could at least halve our pharmaceutical zinc oxide levels with high levels of phytase and keep the same level of performance, if not improve performance. And that was something which we never really persuaded the veterinary profession in the UK was the right thing to do. But we were very, very sure that we should have moved to half zinc levels to get the same impact. And the other thing that was at the time we just didn't understand is we were getting a lot of problems with outdoor herds. We've got a lot of outdoor sow herds with anemia, piglet anemia on outdoor herds. And when we injected them with iron, we still didn't get rid of the anemia. But when we started to superdose our diets, a lot of that anemia just drifted away. But it wasn't till years later we understood that phytate was affecting iron metabolism, and so the thing I wanted to get across from this really is to keep an open mind. If you've got a good R&D system, you get a rogue result. What you think is a rogue result, you have to have some confidence in that. You can go and examine it, and superdosing of phytase for our business was big. It was a big leap forward. I would say it made up for all those lost time of trying to find an alternative growth motors. You know, superdosing put us back on. You know, we were horizontal on the curve of development. We shot back up again and joined the right curve. So that was good. Superdosing was big for us. My point is, if you've got good trial facilities that you really have confidence in, if you get a result like that, you can go for it, really examine it, and believe that there's something to be said for it.
We kind of talked about past learnings. I want to use your expertise and think about what might be the next learnings in, say, the next 3 to 5 to 10 years for the pig industry. And want to start first, because I know you want to make a point about stockmanship, at least in the U.S., right? The level of stockmanship that we have in an entry position or a management position continues to decrease, right? We have less and less people that grow up with, as you did, with a pig literally right next door, right? They might be next door, but they're in a confined facility due to biosecurity reasons, right? At least in the U.S. So maybe talk about first what how important stockmanship is and the education of stockmanship is. And then from there, full runway to talk about what future areas you think that we're going to have to figure out over the next 3, 5 to 10 years, Paul.
The area that I was going to talk about, which sort of brings us back to stockmanship, was I became towards the end of my career, one of the things that, you have to retire at some point, but there's always something you want to, you really want to finish before you retire. The area of frustration for me was, one of the areas of frustration was the whole stockmanship around and feeding around the farrowing process. And again, I found in my working life when I was visiting farms on a regular basis, you had farms with reproductive performance problems and other farms that just didn't seem to have these problems. And often the stockmanship was a part of that. And I found that, I think the point I would want to make is that, again, you need to have an investment. You need to have a good education system for stockmanship, very practical stockmanship. You need to have a way that people can be trained to how to be stockmen. And when they finish their sort of educational training, then can be mentored with people that have just got that innate ability to be good stock people, because they make such a huge difference to the farm. Did you call it wasting disease? Did you have the problem of wasting disease in the States?
No, not really, Paul. Yeah.
Anyway, we had a disease in the UK sort of 20 years ago. One of the things that we found mitigated against it was good stockmanship. It really drew us again into this, how much time and money do you spend educating a stockman and how important it is. That really refocused us in the UK industry, because if you get your nutrition right and your health right, if you get all these things right, and good stockmanship, the pig farm just performs so well. But if stockmanship goes wrong, even when everything else is perfect, it's like that house of cards that just crumbles. So, as I say, I learned the lesson over and over again in terms of a farm where everything is going well, except stockmanship, it just wouldn't function. And reiterating the point I made earlier, my heartache was that these farms are buying, product from me, which costs a lot of money, a piglet starter feed. And one farm would get huge value out of it, the other farm would get much less value. And it made it difficult for me, I think, to really understand why isn't that farmer getting this, the real true value of this product. I'd like just to make a point, which brings me back to farrowing in a minute, if I could. One of the things which we had this fantastic surprise result with superdosing. We had a similar surprising result at the University of Leeds. It was the only university which had indoor pigs and outdoor pigs. But we've got the same genetics, same feed, but they're indoors or outdoors, either for the whole of pregnancy or just for farrowing. And we took we did some experimentation. A PhD student wanted us to do some experimentation, and we took pigs. So these were pigs that were indoors through pregnancy, all together indoors through pregnancy, split then to go outdoors or indoors farrowing. And we took those pigs at weaning. They were fed the same feed, the same quantity of feed. We then took those pigs into the flat deck. and we fed them diets with or without zinc oxide. This was when we were threatened with losing zinc oxide. And to our surprise, we found the pigs that had been farrowed outdoors grew much better and had much less diarrhea than the pigs that had been grown indoors. So there was an outdoor effect. The only stuff in the literature we find was some stuff by Charles Maxwell from Arkansas years ago. Yeah, published something very similar. And we also found in Australia that they'd done some work using creep feed, which was creep feed and fibers and soil as a creep feed. And they got this sort of outdoor benefit. So I became absolutely convinced there's something in soil, you know, the microbiota in soil is something that really sets the pig up for later performance. And that's a bit of a frustration. I don't know what Charles Maxwell is doing now. I know he was looking into soil, but I'm still convinced that you can do something to the microbiota of a pig between birth and weaning, which will have a lifetime impact. And that's something I hope somebody out there is working on. But the other disappointment was just the lack of work around farrowing. We did some work with a product called the beta hydroxy beta methyl butyrate HMB, and we got some really good responses with colostrum quantity and quality. And unfortunately, the product license was withdrawn in Europe, so we couldn't commercially exploit that. But it's very disappointing that there's I think too little research in the area of farrowing. I do like what's happening with fiber, top dressing of fiber, pre-farrowing. I think the use of enzymes these days to try and change some of that fiber from insoluble to soluble fiber. That's something that's easier for us. I think in the Europe, we have more fiber naturally within our ingredients. But the benefits of fiber around farrowing are, you know, again, I think underexplored and underexploited. There's some benefit to the industry to spend, I think, more time looking at fiber around farrowing. But good stockmen just seem to be able to I think see these sows that are having trouble with farrowing and attend to them. Those sows that have trouble at farrowing, you know, they seem to have problems in the next sort of cycle, in the next litter. I'm greatly, I think, indebted to those stockmen that can, you know, really see those things and deal with them quickly and effectively.
Pigs are constantly threatened by the exposure of mycotoxins in their feed. Fumonisins are a highly prevalent mycotoxin that can impact health and performance. DSM Firmenich offers a range of analytical services to assess mycotoxin contamination and solutions to combat mycotoxins. One of these solutions is Fumezyme, the only FDA-approved enzyme to combat fumonisins. Visit dsmfirmenich.com/Fumezyme to learn more.
Yes, same. And yeah, I want to amplify those two things for you, Paul, is A, the need to continue to invest in stockmanship development, and whether it's in the US or European Union or around the world, right? We have to continue to find ways of how do we, first of all, get people interested in being on farm and making a great career and livelihood of it? And then how do we train them, right? That's just something that for so long it was just a given that, hey, we had a population that just grew up with it, right? It was just this innate nature, right? So we have to continue to invest in that. And then the second deal, I want to amplify to the message around all aspects of research around the farrowing period, right? If we look at like sow mortality and our struggles with that, half of that occurs around the farrowing period. We look at, you know, stillborn and then pre-weaning mortality, right? A lot of that's due to complications during the farrowing period. I know that research is expensive. I know that it's difficult because you need the facilities, you need the bred sows, you need all those things, et cetera. But if there was one area that I could emphasize that we need to invest, you know, more time, resources, and talent to, I just want to completely echo and take that 100%, time saying, yes, we got to understand how we can make farrowing just better across all disciplines of production.
I have a number of trial reports of work that I was involved with the sow, and they're all compromised because they're under-replicated. The problem is we have the right idea sometimes. We know what we want to do. We design our trial badly, or we just run out of money, and we end up with a numerical result, but we don't know whether it's significant or not. As I say, to my embarrassment, I do have some reports that look very promising, but they're just under-replicated and therefore null and void. And so you made the point perfectly there, I think. Thank you.
Oh, no, my pleasure. I'm glad you brought it up because it gave us a platform to both talk about it and both argue for it, right? So are there any other thoughts that we missed, Paul, before I get to some fun final questions?
I don't think so. I think we've aired quite a bit of that. I say I don't want to drown you in detail, but no, we've made the points I want to make, I think. Certainly, perhaps just reinforce, I think we can make progress with fibre around farrowing. That's a low-hanging fruit for me to study that area.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com.
Keyes Manufacturing is America's number one source for cheese meal and dairy powders for your feed. Check us out at keysmanufacturing.com.
Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers.
Vaccinova, formulate to your needs, custom-made vaccines. Visit us at vaccinova.us.com for more info. That's vaxxinova.us.com.
SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions.
In swine production, performance is everything. At Lupta, we know your success depends on measurable results. That's why our feed additives go beyond improving palatability. They're scientifically designed to enhance feed intake, support animal well-being, and drive optimal growth. From the weaning transition to periods of stress, our solutions deliver what matters most: resilient animals, improved performance, and a stronger bottom line. Backed by decades of expertise and a commitment to innovation, Lupta is redefining swine nutrition. Because when your herd thrives, so does your business. Lupta, create, connect, inspire. Visit lupta.com to learn more.
All right, so I have three fun questions for you here, Paul, so our audience can get to know you just a little bit better. The first is, what's the biggest hurdle that you've overcome in your career that you're the proudest of?
The one would always have to say on that is, working for commercial companies, there's this accusation all the time that you're doing it for commercial gain, for money. Whereas I saw myself as a scientist trying to get science into practice. And I remember throughout my career, I was often accused of pushing something like superdosing as a way of just making more money for the company. People were very skeptical at first, and I was desperate for other people to do the research, for other people to really get out there and prove it was real. So I think it was this accusation of not being completely for the right thing for the industry, but that was very much what I wanted to see: the industry succeed, and that science could bring the best solutions, quickest. That's what I always felt. Look to science to get the best solution as quickly as possible.
Yeah, no, thanks for sharing. And I mean, what the example you used is superdosing. Like, in my career, like, that's just a common phrase. It's something that we commonly do, right? Yeah. And how big of a fight of a struggle that was for you for that practice to be adopted. The validation came, maybe not as quickly as you wanted, but you got it, Paul.
So. Yes.
All right, last question for you, Paul. Do you have a favorite pork recipe that you'd like to share with our audience?
My favorite pork recipe is very simple one. I love sausages. I absolutely love sausages. Mm. So we have a meal where my wife makes up a mix of vegetables with tomatoes dominating. She just calls it her tomato sauce. When she makes this tomato sauce, I always keep some back so that I can make a dish with my sausages in this tomato sauce, and that's really my idea of the perfect meal.
That sounds outstanding. Yeah. Paul, I want to thank you for your time. I really enjoyed this discussion, and I know our listeners did too. Hope you have a great start to your retirement and next year, Paul.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. It's been great.
And this concludes this episode of the Swinet Podcast. Hope you check out our content every Tuesday.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.